CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is Tuesday morning. It is almost the end of July. August just around the corner. This morning, you know how we like to speak to young people who are doing interesting, important, and impressive things? Well, today we're going to be joined by someone called Himkar Singh, who is an entrepreneur and an engineer, and a recipient of the Forbes Africa 30 Under 30 Award this year. And we'll talk a little bit about what he's busy with, why it's impressive, and, you know, on that whole issue that Michael asked me in the comments about, you know, what the future holds and, you know, global warming and climate change and the environmental lobby and what people are doing to try and make power available and cheaper and less environmentally devastating, and what people are trying to do to make water scarcity less of an issue here in South Africa, where that's one of our major problems. Well, this guy has got his eye on the prize. And the cool thing about living in 2022, which we've got to remember, is that our solutions may be just beyond the horizon. They may be just a few days away. They may be months, years, but not, you know, generations away. We could figure out, somewhere in our lifetimes even, things like how to pull carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. There are already people doing it and reversing the effects of climate change. And we're able to do more and more clever, adaptive, and brilliant things as a species that will enable us to live much longer and much more happy lives on this planet and do less damage, frankly, because we'll be able to turn around. For all we know, those solutions are right on the horizon. So I'm very happy we'll have this guest join us in just a short while because, you know, for all we understand about this, it may be a lot simpler if we just trust the people who actually know, who do know what's going on, not the ones who pretend that they know what's going on, but the experts, the people who've spent their lives working on engineering and scientific projects that could deliver incredible results for humanity somewhere in the very near future. And, you know, it's space exploration. It's being able to figure out what we can do when we mine into the earth, what we can pull out, what we can put back in, what we can do with the air and what we can do with our water resources. All of this stuff is part of how we will make the world work and make it work better. Yonder says these networks are all just useless. Never try anything new. In SA, for instance, we have a huge market that is not fully tapped into urban areas. The Tesla Pi will be a disruptive one. Yeah, you remember, I mean, you know, Lebang, I was talking with Yakud now, and it just got me thinking. Remember what we used to pay, like R2.50 for an SMS? Do you remember that?
Oh, when they were days. How much do SMSs cost anyway? Who still SMSs?
Now I don't think they cost you anything. Now I don't think they cost you a single cent. But we used to pay R2.50 an SMS. Tell me we weren't being ripped off. Excuse me. Right?
Yeah. No, but Yonder's absolutely correct. You know, you have a problem with the current service provider you're on. You ask people, who are you with? Who should I go to? They're all rubbish. There's no one that is like the one. They're all nonsense. But also, rather the devil you know, you end up, Yaku's got a point, you'd rather just, you know, find that one and just stick to it. So you end up just taking the crap that you're being fed because they're all kind of the same. There's no better devil. So it's tricky. It is quite tricky. And we are definitely being overcharged. We still are. If 250 for SMSs back then was a shitload, even till this day, the amount that we pay for data is just bullshit. It doesn't make any sense. It's nonsense compared to other countries. This is our everyday fight. I mean, you know how Facebook has like a memory thing where it shows you what you posted years ago?
Yes.
Yesterday, it showed me that 11 years ago, I posted my BBM pin. My BBM pin.
Wow.
Where I would pay 60 rands a month for the whole month to speak to people, to live. It was amazing. You know, I had a moment. I was like, we took advantage of you. Because, frick, man, that was just amazing. Now look at us struggling. It's nonsense.
Well, this is why you got to be awake. You got to pay attention. It's up to you to decide how much you're going to let them take advantage of you. And if you make, you know, if you make stupid mistakes, you're going to pay stupid prices. That's unfortunately the way it works. All right. So, a couple of things that we've got to get to this morning, and one of the things that you actually wanted to talk about, the pressures of impressing and getting along with the woman in your man's life or the men in your woman's life. And this could be a work thing, you know, especially because a lot of people spend a huge amount of time at work, and then they expect their wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or husband to get to know their work colleagues. And sometimes that's just not on everybody's list of priorities. Is that what you're talking about? Or are you talking more in the family sense? Cause that's also a thing.
Yeah. So this past weekend, I went to a place called Duduza, right? Which is like a township on the far, far east end, like past Vosloo, close to Springs. It was far. Mm-hmm. It was my first time there, but I was like, cool, let's try new things. And when I got there, one of my friends who has been married into this family for about 10 years was really having a tough time, Gareth. Like, she was holding her baby, right? Obviously, just, you know, mom of the century. And then all the women, like, at that function, we're like requesting things of her. Go check the pots. Go check the this. Go do this. And she would stop and go do all that shit. And I'm like, bro, you know, I get it. These are like your husband's cousins and sisters, but this is a lot. Like, this is a lot of pressure. And she just said to me, you know, you got to do what you got to do. I'm like, no, you don't got to do what you got to do in this situation. Like, you don't have to impress, or, I mean, 10 years in, by now they should be cutting you some slack. It's not like you just arrived yesterday. And it just kind of sucked to see her in that situation, having to really stop and have to tend to everybody's needs because she is the magoti in the situation. 10 years into marrying this family. So I just kind of, it just really made me think, like, damn, that's a lot of pressure. And I can imagine how many people buckle under that kind of pressure. Yeah. And you're right, even in the workplace setting where, you know, your partner works with like a bunch of men, and now you have to, you know, sort of like impress these men, or, oh, fuck.
No, it feels very old school. You know, to expect, and what you experienced there with this friend of yours, where she's like, she's already looking after a kid and she's doing a whole bunch of things. And now she must also be in the kitchen. She must be catering to these people and looking after their whims like they're guests of honor. It's kind of irritating. And I don't understand. And maybe it's a sexist thing. It could well be. I mean, I'm always loath to jump to that conclusion because, you know, usually it's wrong. Usually it's just, that's how that person feels, but it's not the truth. I wonder if we have to reevaluate this stuff. It takes someone to stand up for themselves. Just like we were saying a minute ago with service providers who are treating you like shit, you need to stand up for yourself, and no one else is going to do that for you. You're not going to change their behavior unless you change yours first. You can only change yourself in order to manifest change everywhere else. You can't climb into someone else's head and go, be better, be more, you know, pay more attention.
Definitely.
So she's almost got to stand up for herself. So as much as you feel sorry for her, like, this is her thing to fix. I know it sounds horrible, but she can fix this.
Yeah. She has to. It was sucky for me because I'm standing up for her on her behalf while she's just like, no, it's cool. I'll do it. No, dude, you're not supposed to do anything that you don't have to. You know what I mean? But yeah, it was just a very sucky thing to end the year 2020. These are still the things that we're experiencing. Why?
Well, I mean, don't you think there's also a huge amount of like tradition? And tradition can be good and it can be bad. There's this idea that women, you know, have this role in society. And this is, it's not the men, by the way, who are busy enforcing this nonsense. It's actually the other women. Which is something
that's
we need to talk about.
Part.
We need to talk about that.
It's always
that.
Like woman on woman. Yes. And it's because these women probably went through it themselves. So they feel as though it's the right thing to do to also put these women. No. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much unlearning we need to do, Gareth. So, so much unlearning. It's not even funny. And I can't wait to start the process of unlearning because, yo, we are just so messed up.
If this happened in your family, would you tolerate that shit? Would you put up with it? And how long would it take you to just lose it and say, no, this is not my, I'm not doing this?
Nah, dude, never. It wouldn't. There's no way. I wouldn't allow it. It didn't happen to me. I don't expect anybody to
In other words,
that.
when someone wants you to do the traditional thing and be the, you know, the subservient woman, and you know, there's a lot of this in culture, you just say no straight up.
No, luckily for me, I don't have to deal with that. You know, I'm in a family where, you know, there's no woman's duties and men's duties.
Okay.
If you've got two hands, you're going to cook. If you, you know how to clean for yourself, that kind of thing. So I'm very lucky that, you know, I don't have to deal with any of that. But to see it just kind of makes me so iffy and icky. I'm like, oh, what is this? What year? Ugh, 1999 just called. They want their behavior back, because what is this and why is this still a thing? So, and
Rusty's saying here, respecting elders? Is that a thing that you automatically do?
Oh, no, yeah, you have to. That's standard procedure.
Okay.
You know, that is, I'm not trying to trap you here,
but if you say that that's automatic behavior that you should do, that's something that's right, it's correct to do this, who says? Who says? I mean, again, people have all these traditions and they have these things that they consider to be, you know, this is the way our families always behave. This is what we do in our culture. Mm-hmm. This is our tribe. This is our thing. Why not call bullshit on that too? I mean, respecting elders. Just because someone's been around on earth longer than you doesn't mean they know more. They might be a complete idiot.
Yes.
We all know old idiots.
So that's correct. Yes, that's absolutely correct. But that's why I use the word unlearn specifically, because if you were raised in a certain way and these are your family traditions and they've said that this is how we're going to do things, they may not apply to the year 2022. And those things actually may work against your tradition. And they may, not your tradition, it may work against the day and age that we're living in. That's why the word unlearn is so important. And remember, Gareth, with respecting elders, respect in the sense of, like, you know, maybe not talking back, you know, there's a way. It's more about the tone that you engage with them versus you're talking shit, old person. Do you know what I mean? It's just about being aware. It just boils down to...
But I don't know, a lot of people are going to go and say, like, you're talking shit, old person, and, like, dismiss them completely, even though that's hilarious. I mean, I can think of a couple of ways that would be funny. But there's this automatic thing that we do, which is not good. It's not right. We are screwing ourselves. And just like your friend who's expected to do these wifely, motherly duties and things, and we know it's bullshit, and she's not standing up for herself, I'm saying a lot of this shit needs to be reevaluated. What other rules are there in society that you shouldn't just accept blindly? I mean, any authority, you should question authority, right? I mean, isn't that's stoicism? That's a good philosophy to live by. You prove that you have the authority to be able to say X, Y, and Z, and then I'll take you seriously. Same as with age. Just because you're older than me doesn't mean you know more. I'm not going to be rude to you, but I'm not going to necessarily grant you automatic respect.
Yeah, free respect just because of your age. No, I completely agree. There's pros and cons to both. I think the biggest cons is it's what have you done to earn my ear? You know, why should I listen to you? Am I just listening to you because, you know, of the fact that you're 87? The thing is, back in the day, I think a lot of these people were, like, very wise. You know, some of them are wise. I mean, some of the best stories, you know, come from our grandmothers and grandfathers and the experience that they've got in their storytelling. You hear it and you're like, man, you've lived a life. So automatically it's like, because I've lived so long, you must respect me. Nah, I don't think that's a real thing. But there is a way, Garrett, there is a way where you don't cross a line. Do you know what I mean? Because some kids, especially like Gen Zs, they just take advantage of that. They talk to their elders like they're just talking to their friends. And that's where it gets messy. There's just a line that shouldn't be crossed, is my belief. Where it's like,
it sounds a bit arbitrary, if you don't mind my saying. It sounds like you're saying there's a line, but you're not going to define the line. And then someone says something, you might get upset with them. Sometimes they can get away with it. It's too fuzzy. Like, we need to have rules here.
I agree. But again, back to the word unlearning. I think in the learning of all these old school traditional things, there was a lot of gray area. There was a lot of fuzzy. You know, there was nothing that was set in stone and black and white, and this is what it is. So too much.
Ruth has a good one, and this is something that people automatically do, even though it's a dumb idea. How much money people have. Respect needs to be earned. I met an elderly gentleman at a party, and the first thing he said was so racist that was me done. No respect. Now, this thing about money is something I've thought about a lot. Why is it that we have transferred our automatic respect? And we used to always say, well, if someone holds a certain office, like let's say they're the chancellor of a university, or they're the CEO of a business, or they are the president of a society or something, we go, ooh, that's very impressive. You know, ooh, that's very, very good. I'm so happy to hear about that. Oh, by the way, is your baby crying? Do you need to go?
She was crying, but she fell asleep again. So I'll go check on her at like 7:30.
All right.
She wakes up again, but it's quiet now.
Shame. Sorry about that. Just saw your message now. Yeah. So why is it we give automatic respect to someone who's earned a lot of money, or not even earned, someone who just has a lot of money? Because sometimes somebody's inherited money and we go, oh, well, you know, he's very rich, or she's got lots and lots of money. And people do, they defer. They say, well, that person's so rich, they must be special. They must have more knowledge than me. They must be a special kind of person. Maybe they've got some skills that I don't have, which is nonsense. And even if they've earned that money themselves, sure, that's respectable in some cases. But I know a lot of either morally questionable people who've made lots of money, or people who aren't even that bright. They're not really that smart. They've lucked out. They came up with a great idea or invention at the right time. We all know timing is a huge part of this equation. You know, if you were a footballer like Cristiano Ronaldo, 40, 50, 60 years before he was born, would you be earning the hundreds of millions that he's earning? Obviously not. If you were born in the 1800s as Cristiano Ronaldo, you'd be working on a farm with your hands, right? You would not be kicking a ball around being paid hundreds of millions. So for some people, it's just pure luck. You were born at the right time. You have the right skill. And of course, he's worked very hard. I don't take any of that away from him. But you understand my point about timing, right? It's a big, big deal. I would like to know why it is that we give people automatic respect if they have money. And as Jean says, why do we disrespect the poor, like the homeless? Why do we immediately assume that because someone's homeless, they're worthless? Sometimes there are really awful, extenuating circumstances that have put someone under a bridge, for example, or in a mental hospital, or in a severe depression, or in a situation where all their relationships have failed. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, some disease or some unfortunate accident. I'm saying that sometimes your timing and your luck are just not great. It could happen to any of us. And I wonder why it is that we have automatic respect for some people, automatic disrespect for other people. And very often our reasons for choosing those things are so arbitrary. Oh, they're older than me. Oh, they're richer than me. Oh, they're smarter than me. These are not good reasons to treat someone with disrespect. And you yourself to be treated with disrespect. You know, there was a time where Elon Musk was bullied. There was a time where Cyril Ramaphosa was not taken seriously in politics. There was a time where people who are successful and brilliant in any particular endeavor, and we all look up to them now, where they weren't taken seriously. Francois says, I experienced that whilst I was at Sabi Sands Reserve. Apparently you get a PhD in ecology when you buy a property there. Ha! Yeah, you see, somebody who's rich enough to buy a property in one of these places, suddenly they become like an expert on wildlife. And all the people who actually studied this stuff, nah, it doesn't matter, because these guys know, because they've got the checkbook. They're the ones paying the bills, right? K&A says, this is right. Money buys access. Access buys power. Power buys influence. And that is largely true. But we've got to reevaluate how we decide what we add value and respect. Respect is a difficult one. I've had so many arguments about respect with people, because we all see respect in different ways. And really, you know, your definition may be very different to mine. I don't think that there's a basic level of respect. Like, you treat everybody equally. You treat everybody the same until they prove differently. That's basic respect. But then you get a level above that, which is, wow, I really respect that. I respect your decisions. I respect you as a person. I respect what you've gone through. And that requires a little bit more insight into the person. The basic human respect, I think we all get. You know, you don't treat people like shit. And if you do treat people like shit, then you're going to be treated like shit too. But if you go beyond the basic level of respect, then there is the thing that I think most people confuse these two levels of respect. They expect one to be the other and the other to be the one that they're not thinking of. The basic human respect, like treat everybody the same, the homeless person, the president, the CEO, the car wash guy, treat them all with respect in terms of their basic humanity. That, I think, is essential. If you don't do that, you're a horrible person. But then when you actually have a lot of respect for someone, that's like a layer on top of that. That's the next layer up. And that one's different. Everybody has different reasons for granting that. Some people will just do it because you're older or you're richer or you have a degree in something. And that's not always a good reason to do it. But then, you know, who am I to say? Because you might like it more than you might have thought about it more than I have in that respect with that person. I shouldn't have used the word respect in that sentence. It's now really confused things.
So the baby is definitely crying. So I'm here to bid you adieu. But I'll leave you with this.
Mm-hmm.
If we can, you see, what we place money and power and this, I guess, automatic respect and automatic I'm better than you, if we can remove that from currently where it is, then I think faith in humanity will be restored. I worry a lot about how much emphasis we put on this bullshit and this, and really the stuff that's fluff. Because again, if you remove that, what's left? If you remove all this money and you remove all this, all these accolades and even, you know, the degrees and all this education that you receive, if we can remove all of that, then dude, what you're left with is who you really are. That is my parting word.
Yeah. Okay.
Enjoy the rest of the show.
I'll be
tuned in.
I'll keep arguing with what you've just said while you're away because you've got important mommy duties. All right, Lebang, we'll chat to you next week.
I'll see you guys next week. Cheers, guys.
Be good. We've got a guest joining us in a short while, but I just want to pick up on what Lebang said now. I mean, some people define themselves by those things, so you've got to be careful. Yeah, someone's self-description, the way that they identify, to use like woke terminology. I identify as a student of philosophy, for example. You know, to some people, that's the most important thing about them. And Jean says people would rather respect someone with money than someone with a PhD. Yeah, but there are some people who respect a PhD more than money. So again, depends who you're talking to, right, Jean? Ruth says we inherited this from the classification system. It shouldn't hold water today. A man should be judged on his actions and his behavior. I agree with that. Don't judge them by their words, judge them by their behavior. I think it's a very, very good way to look at the world. Sanella says, I use a simple concept. Race, color, age, class doesn't matter with me. I operate purely on mutual respect. I give as good as I get. It goes both ways, respect or disrespect. That's a pretty good philosophy. Respect them until they prove you wrong, says Stone Philosopher. It's just that word carries with it so much other stuff, you know, and it does get very, very complicated. So speaking of people I respect and people who I'm interested in talking to, our guest this morning is somebody who is really awesome. I mean, I mentioned earlier, Himkar Singh, an entrepreneur and engineer. We like to talk to young people on this show who are doing impressive things. And today's guest is just such a person. He's a recipient of the Forbes Africa 30 Under 30 Award this year. He left South Africa during the recent water crises, not to avoid the problem, but to go and find a solution. I mean, in PE at the moment, you know that they're still dealing with this water crisis. So Himkar went over and lived in Germany, Vietnam, and in Jordan to experience different extremes of water management while completing a master's degree in water management. He found what he thinks is one fundamental solution that we are slow to implement, so he came back to South Africa to start a business with a model to improve our soil's ability to hold water, with a larger vision of regenerative agriculture as part of the picture. So I'm going to let him explain all of this to us. But he has this environmental initiative, which is called the Compost Kitchen, which he launched back in 2018. And he is now the winner of not only this Forbes Africa 30 Under 30 Award, but also he's been placed on the United Nations list of the top 300 best practices on sustainability in the world just last year for this incredible discovery and invention of his. So, Himkar, it's a great pleasure to have you on the show. How are you?
Thanks so much, Cliff Central, for having me. I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
Nice to see you, man. First of all, congratulations on all these accolades. I'm sure they are immensely deserved, and it's taken you a long time and a huge amount of thinking and effort to have got to this point. So well done. Bask in that glory for a second. It's terrific.
Yeah, thanks. The Forbes one is particularly proud of because, you know, in South Africa at this time, we're starting to feel a bit negative about how things are looking.
Right.
But an award like this shows that there's still businesses that are innovating, they're still growing, they're navigating the challenges that are amongst us. So, you know, I think it gives hope to South Africa, and I'm very proud to have obtained that for South Africa.
I think we need a lot of stories like yours, not only because it makes us feel better, but because it's actually starting to contribute to the world being a little bit more sensible and, you know, a little bit more functional and efficient, and certainly that's what you've been doing. So first of all, Himkar, it's not the most sexy subject in the world. So what got you interested in water management?
Yes, actually, yeah, in 2017, there was a very bad drought, right? Mm-hmm. That was when we were talking about day zero in Cape Town.
That's right.
And I thought back to my primary school days when I visited Rand Water, the water utility in Johannesburg, in MSV grade four, and they warned us that there would be water scarcity issues in the future mm-hmm. if we didn't save water. So I thought in 2017, they knew about this 20 years ago. They warned me, but it still happened.
Yeah.
So I felt like if we didn't do something, change whatever we were doing, then it's going to happen again and again in the future until we just can't live in South Africa anymore. So that's why I decided to leave the country to find a solution.
So tell me about these countries that you decided to go to. I mean, Jordan is an interesting one. Vietnam. Tell me what you discovered in these places.
Yeah, so Germany is where the degree was based because Germany is a master of water management. Netherlands okay. and Germany are very good at water management. Mm-hmm. And so I lived in Germany for 5 months and I picked up, you know, they are very good with project management and technology yes. in managing their water. And they also, you know, I was picking up puzzle pieces along the way. I didn't yet know my solution at the end or while I was doing it until the end. But I observed that they have an organic waste collection system for their waste. So you can't throw your organic waste, your food waste, in the normal bin. The garbage collection won't take it if you do that. So I observed that system was possible, you know, for the first time. And then in Vietnam, I also lived there for 5 months. And I observed that, you know, their problems have water excess. They have flooding, lot of excess rain. And that washes a lot of pollution into the water channels. So they have a problem with the water quality. And so I connected waste and water through that experience. And also while I was walking to my university every day, I would walk past the dumpsters. And there would be about 50 to 60% food waste. So, you know, I was observing what we're actually doing as a society in terms of food waste. And then in Jordan's a water scarce country. Right. They have about a tenth of the water we have, but they actually have some of the best soil in the world if they were to put organic matter back in the soil. Hmm. And if they did that, they could become an agricultural powerhouse of that region, which would stabilize the region a bit.
And haven't they already done some of that in Israel, for example? I mean, it's just down the road, basically. And Israel's managed to recycle water. They've managed to make fertile soil out of desert. And so it's possible for Israel. It's possible for Jordan.
It's absolutely possible. Hmm. And that's when I picked up that the importance of organic matter in the soil. The organic matter is what makes the soil act like a sponge, so it holds onto the water when the rain comes. But in South Africa, we're finding that when the rain comes, the water just runs away very quickly, right? But it never used to be like that. It always used to infiltrate into the ground and come out again in rivers. So what we need to be doing is putting the organic matter back into the soil. And I just collected all the systems that I experienced and then developed what we have now.
I love this. All right, so tell us now about this plan of yours, the compost kitchen, and how it works, because this is also about putting the organic stuff back into the soil, making the soil richer, at the same time able to absorb the water. I mean, many of us live in cities, we live in towns. It's very difficult for us to have a huge amount of space, and we don't think about things like, the soil health. And I remember learning about this stuff at high school, but I haven't thought about it much since then. So tell us about your initiative, how it fits into all of that, and what basic stuff we may have forgotten or what we need to learn about soil and about water and about how we can manage both better.
I think maybe what we've forgotten is that two pumpkins are not the same. One grown in this farm is different to another one grown at home.
Yes.
And that's because of the conditions in which it grows, which mainly is impacted by its soil. So the healthier your soil, the healthier your food will be, and then the healthier your body will be. So I've always been focusing on health, and I've experimented with if I grow my own food, what does it do to my energy levels and my feeling of life? And there's definitely a difference. So, we're trying to encourage people to remember if you want to make it easier to grow organic, just take care of your soil. It becomes very easy after that.
All right, but explain to us your compost initiative. How does that fit into all of these things?
Yeah, so in Johannesburg, we collect food waste from households and then from on a weekly basis, and then we recycle it into a compost called vermicompost. Vermicompost is very high quality compost made by earthworms, and then we give the vermicompost back to customers at the end of the month, and they can use that in their vegetable garden. And customers pay about 200 rand a month for that service. And then secondly, a second model which we've just introduced towards the end of last year. We've been going 3 years. We've got a composting machine because we've got many customers who aren't in our collection zone who want to compost. So the machine is you just put your food waste in the machine, you press on, and then in 5 hours it turns it into a compost that you can bury in your soil. So that's being very popular at the moment.
Where do you get the earthworms?
You can buy them from us.
Oh wow, okay. So what do you how does it work? Do I walk into your facility, your shop, your place, and I can buy a tub of earthworms, or I can get my soil back after I've given it to you? How exactly does it work? I need to understand how the do I arrive with a wheelbarrow full of soil? Like, explain it to me like I'm an idiot, because I am.
Well, we go door to door and we collect the waste from you.
Okay.
Then at the end of the month, we give you the vermicompost in a bag. So if you want worms to do your own vermicomposting, yeah, we sell them for 350 rand for 1,500 worms.
It's amazing. And are you farming these somewhere else?
Yes, we have about 1 million earthworms in stock.
That's incredible. I mean, are there people who were doing this before, or is this entirely a novel and original concept?
There were many people doing different aspects of what we're doing. For example, many people were doing vermicompost, many were doing compost, many were doing waste collection, but nobody put them all together in the model that we created, where we collect from the household, we make vermicompost, and we give the vermicompost back. That was the first in the world that we came across. And
Amazing.
the reason was because in South Africa, we've sensed that there was a low trust in the recycling industry. Because there's been many stories of the recycling not reaching the recycling plant. So by giving the vermicompost back, we prove that it's been recycled, and that makes people more likely to pay for the service.
So what if I have I've got this one part of my garden that's a disaster at the moment. I don't know what to do with it. I'm going to try and grow some stuff in it, but the soil's not so great. Do you come with a truck and collect that and then charge me per cubic meter of soil? And then you bring it back for me a couple of days later and you bring me the nice soil and then I can grow stuff in it. How do you charge? What would that cost? Or do you just do the smaller kind of urban you know, pot plant stuff.
That's a great idea. We haven't thought of that before. But we sell compost in bulk as well.
Okay, like, so what, like bags?
Bags and big loads, a bucky load.
Oh, wow.
It's a big pile. And then you can mix that in your soil and fix your soil in situ. And then you can start planting from there.
Brilliant. And you have the worms included in that?
We don't include it, but we can talk.
I love it. This is business. This is beautiful. Himkar, so how's the business going? Are you guys making some money yet?
Yeah, we're doing fine. It's just that during load shedding, we were struggling a bit because the sentiment was really low, especially because of our new product. It's an electronic product, right? So people are hesitant to buy more electronic products during load shedding time. But then we just asked our customers, what exactly are you feeling? And they just told us they're not sure how much energy it uses. So we just made it clear on our website. We changed the website a little bit. 0.7 kilowatt hours. That's about R1 worth of electricity. And then people were, you know, really, it's insignificant amount of energy. So, you know, sales have been up since then.
Carl wants to know, please ask your guest if he knows about bokshi bins. I create fertilizer using all our food waste and I use it in my garden. Bokshi bins, are you aware of these?
Bokashi, yes.
Bokashi bins. Sorry.
It's a system of fermenting your food waste.
Mm-hmm.
It's been quite fashionable these days. I think I've tried it, but I've never been able to have it not smell. It's not supposed to smell, but I've tried everything and it always smells. So we didn't really go that route. We believe the solution is technology. You just have to use technology to fast forward some of the processes to avoid the stink, to avoid any flies, liquid. And so we're focusing on technology now.
Is it easier to do the soil stuff? Is it easier to improve the quality of your soil in the winter or the summer? When's the best time to do it? Or does it not matter?
It depends what we're doing. There's different types of improvement we can do. Some we can mix organic waste into the soil.
Mm-hmm.
That you typically only do once. And then after that, after the first rain of the season, you're supposed to put mulch. Mulch is like shredded up garden waste that covers the soil. It's like wood chips.
Yes.
And because you're not actually supposed to ever see the soil. In a natural forest, you don't see soil. It's always covered by what's called the litter layer, the leaves,
that's
the trees.
Right.
And so after that, every season, you would just put mulch. You wouldn't need to put compost every season, except if you've got a lawn. You do need to put compost every year for that.
Do you think part of our problem in South Africa is that we don't actually look after the surface stuff? We get so much that's paved and tarred, and water just has nowhere to go. I often look at our stormwater drain situation in South Africa, and I look at roads. And whenever it rains more than, say, 50 mils in a given space of time, it just creates these huge – it turns our roads into rivers, and then – those rivers, roads, empty into the stormwater drain system, which is sometimes blocked up or is sometimes overwhelmed. And there's just nowhere for this water to go because everything is paved and tarred. Do you think that that's a major problem in urban areas? And that's part of the reason that we have so much flash flooding and so many people who live in places where, you know, rivers overflow and that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think we've forgotten the value of soil. The value of soil is so many benefits in soil, but we've come to see it as a bit dirty and not really understanding what it can do for us. And I do definitely think it's an increasing problem. I think we can probably agree it's getting worse and worse. And that also probably means that it used to be better and better. It used to be not such a big problem. And that means we're increasing that problem. We're doing something that's causing that problem.
Yeah.
One could also say it's climate change, but the rate at which it's happening is so fast that it's more likely the behavior that we have with soil. And it's just because we don't understand soil yet. But we're finding that that's reversing. It's becoming very aware. People are becoming aware now of soil. Their health is definitely being impacted by all kinds of things in their lifestyle, and they're looking for solutions on that. And naturally, soil always comes up in a solution about health somehow. It's always the fundamental.
So what's next for you? I mean, you've done all these impressive things already. How old are you, by the way?
30. I was 29 when I got the Forbes 30 under 30.
Just made it. You just made it.
Yeah.
All right, so 30 years old, you've got this business. It seems that you've got everything sorted out. The future is looking very bright for you. But what's next? Where do you take it from here?
We're experiencing a lot of interest for our iCompost device. That's the name of the machine in Europe. More interest than in South Africa.
Oh, really?
And so we might look at exporting there.
Okay.
Or setting up a factory there. But that's very difficult. You know, I'm not a businessman. I only know water. So to understand how to set up an operation like that, I need partners, and that takes a while to develop. So yeah, towards the end of next year, end of this year, we'll be looking to expand our operations.
Well, Hemkar, it sounds to me like you're on the right trajectory, and it sounds like you've got some incredible ideas. I hope that we will see you succeed in wild and incredible ways going forward. Well done to you. This is this tremendous stuff, and I'm glad that we've got people like you working on solutions. We talk about climate change, we talk about the environment, but it's people like you figuring things out for us at this kind of level that starts to make the change that can eventually lead to all kinds of incredible strides forward. So as I said at the beginning, we are placing our hopes for the future in ideas and in people like you. So well done. It's really a pleasure to have you
Thank
on the
you.
Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Very, very good. Nice to see you, Hemkar. That's Hemkar Singh. He's just incredible. I mean, wow, what a story, huh? He's worked on this compost so you could buy worms. You can have soil compost delivered. I mean, it's brilliant. And I mean, it's not completely revolutionary, but it's bringing back ideas that we know work. And he's been looking at countries that have very little water, countries that have a lot of water, countries that have extremely fertile soil and others that are quite arid. And it seems to me like if you look after what you've got and if you put the right stuff in and you take the wrong stuff out, you can make it all better. Sounds obvious, but you can also make your immediate environment that much more healthy and maybe contribute to the good rather than the bad. All right, so Carl says he's got one of these Bokashi bins things and he doesn't have any smell in there. No meat, no onions, no smell at all. Well, what do you put in there? Just the vegetable waste? I mean, I've walked past a rubbish bin or two if it's been standing there for more than 4 or 5 days, especially in the summer, and you know all about it. So you gotta tell us what you put in there. Myco root for your soil will give all the mycorrhizal fungi. I'm sure that's wrong. Corona's boring, but I'll take your word for it. I've just realized I've been calling you Bokang Hosana all morning. I have no idea why. I apologize, Lebang. I've had my coffee now. Don't worry, Sunil. It's absolutely fine. Cat feces. Ugh. All Lady 1000 says, does cat feces have a negative effect on the composition of the soil in my garden, and how can I improve it? I'm pretty sure cat feces has a negative effect on everything it touches. Yuck. V. Ruiz says, Gareth, I don't mean to scare you, but the books over your left shoulder are not in height order. What? Left shoulder? Oh, I know that. Yeah, I'm very well aware of that. Don't worry. There's a system, trust me. Steve says, put the right stuff in, pull it out, shake it all about. Yeah, I know where you're going with that. Thank you very much. What a great solution, says Derek. Dun, 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 dun. Very good. Well, we've had a busy morning. We had Yaku on. Lebang and I spoke about pretty much everything involving banyana, corruption, misinformation, disinformation. It's been a very busy start to the day. Carl says, Gareth, yes, you can put all vegetable waste, eggshells, coffee grounds, etc. It's great. It's inexpensive. Okay. Well, I mean, listen, I've got a little bit of space outside my kitchen that is just a disaster at the moment. It's like a courtyard for rubbish. So, you know, all the ash from the fire, all the soil that I can't find another place for, rocks that I've found in the garden, old bits of crap that I find lying around, it all goes into there. And if I just put in some effort and maybe created a little compost bin type thing, maybe I could make it useful finally. I'll have to see. You've inspired me a little bit, Carl, and I hate to say that because usually you're the one who is swearing at me in the morning. So I'm going to have to get out there and get going with that at some point. But not today. No, today I have a whole lot of meetings and important things to achieve. Not that composting isn't important. I mean, Himkar taught us that, if nothing else. But yeah, we'll see what we can do about that. I've got to get stuck in. There are a couple of things that I've put off for such a long time. First of all, because obviously they cost money. But second of all, I know some of these projects, once you get into them, it becomes a little bit obsessive. And then you want to do it right. So I'm going to be the first to make the change. Like I said to Lebang earlier with that friend of hers who wasn't being respected by the family, you have to make the change. So if I'm going to talk about, you know, these great people who are doing these great things like Himkar is, and trying to make the world a better place one step at a time, I got to do it too. Single people don't create enough waste unless you're very domesticated. That's what Steve says. I don't make a whole lot of mess. I mean, I don't throw out a lot of rubbish. If I compare the amount of rubbish that leaves my house to the amount that leaves my neighbors' houses, and they mostly have kids, and then I think I'm probably doing less to fill up the earth with crap. But who knows? Some days I might be worse than them. Who can tell? How quickly can one of these things decompose a body? I'm asking for a friend. All right, now we're going to have to put you on the watch list, V-Rus. That's unfortunately proof that you're a nutcase. So we're going to have to put you on there. All right, everybody, have an awesome day today. We will be back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, bright and early, with a whole lot more. It is a Wednesday, so we've got Simpiwe, and we've got a special guest joining us. And then, of course, the Burning Platform on Thursday morning. Just quickly before I go, I was watching the TV news last night. Try to do that at least once or twice a week. And I saw that the city of Cape Town is trying to get off the grid. They're going to make themselves completely independent of Eskom. That's the plan anyway, going forward, which I think is absolutely fantastic. So I put out a thing on Instagram saying, you know, well done, city of Cape Town. Screw Eskom. If we can all get away from them, that's very good. That's one reason, by the way, that I think so many people want to move to Cape Town. Because if Cape Town figures this out and they end up doing a really clever job of buying electricity back into the grid, for example, I think that'll make it one of the places in South Africa, if not the world, that people will want to migrate to. And the genius behind this is the mayor of Cape Town, Jordan Hill Lewis, who we're actually going to get on the show at some point because I mentioned it and I thought this is a guy to talk to. And luckily he contacted us, so he'll be on the show at some point soon, where he will be able to tell us how they came up with the idea and what they're going to be doing. I think it'll be awesome. All right, lots of good stuff on the way in the rest of your day today, including Catalytics Unbundled with Yaku, who was on our show just a bit earlier. Don't go anywhere. There's plenty to keep you entertained, amused, enthralled, informed, empowered, and inspired. That's what we do. We will see you tomorrow. Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com